Yes, very unpopular. He was the organizer of strikes now.
Was he unpopular among some of the Ceylonese political leaders too?
I don't think so. I don't think so. They may not have approved some of the methods which he adopted to call out the workers on strike. But he was not unpopular among them.
Now, weren't people like Henry de Mail and others a bit jealous? Some of the municipal councillors in particular.
Gunasinghe?
Yes.
I think so. I think so.
I was wondering whether they also felt that he is not the same social class.
Yes, they must have felt. Would you excuse me for a minute? Yes. Yes.
What about the elections in those days? For the, elections for the state council, for instance. What were the factors which helped people to win or to lose elections?
Some of them voted for a candidate because he's a Buddhist. Some voted because he's a man of the same caste. And very few voted taking his qualifications into account. That was the very start. Mm-hmm. But we had an intelligent electorate. And some capable men selected.
Generally, you found people fairly well known in the district coming forward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was it possible for a candidate to win a seat by finding out the big men in each village and getting them onto his side by providing some favors or even providing money?
I don't think that possibility existed to a great extent, but it was possible, not impossible.
Mm-hmm. I suppose the influence of the headman was counted.
Oh yes, it was counted a lot.
Now, on the other hand, you found Philip Gunawardena and N.M. Pereira defeating the old aristocracy in Ruanvala and Avisavala.
Yes.
How did that happen?
That even people were more aware of their rights. So they couldn't be misled easily.
When they were making election speeches, if it was a case of a fight between two different castes, as in those days, were they quite open about this factor? I mean, they were not ashamed to use the word and to attack the other caste, other men.
That was not done publicly. Mm-hmm. It was not done from public platforms. Mm-hmm. But there is a possibility that people influence in such subtle ways.
Mm-hmm. But when they went from house to house?
House to house, yes.
I suppose when you are thinking of the sort of the religious anger, the Pandur elections of 36 would be a good example. I mean, the one between
yes.
A.P. Jasur and E.W. Pereira. On the other hand, can't you say that E.W. Pereira lost because he didn't
go from place to place?
Yes.
That is one of the factors that contributed to his defeat. He thought that he is the most suitable man and that he expected people to do their duty by him. Again, then?
For instance, I presume your family had some a fair amount of influence in that electorate.
Yes.
Do you feel that the candidates were especially trying to win the support of your family? Or?
Well, our family, of course, we were always for EWL. Although we are Buddhist, mm-hmm. we worked and voted for him because we thought that he was the most better man.
I suppose his approach to this was rather old-fashioned. He felt that he shouldn't go and canvass.
That is true. That is true. That is the main factor that contributed to his defeat.
What about the fact that he resided in Kottai and not at Panagura?
That didn't have any... That made no difference. That made no difference.
What sort of man was he?
He was a great patriot, very statesman, very great lawyer, mm-hmm. and a man who had certain principles.
I'm also interested in people like F.R. Senanayake and E.T. De Silva, who died fairly young.
Mm, yes.
How would you appraise the two of them?
F.R. Senanayake, of course, is a great philanthropist who spent almost all his money for the sake of the country. E.T. De Silva was a great, very powerful speaker, and at the very start, he used to contribute to the world and write leaders to the daily news. And he died young.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering whether later on, D.S. Senanayake felt that old Mr. E.W. Perera would be a challenge to his leadership.
That may be the reason why he worked against him at the election before his death. In fact, D.S. Senanayake worked not very openly, worked against E.W. Perera in the Kalani.
Worked very openly?
Very openly.
But isn't he related to the Jayawardenes?
Who, E.W. Perera?
No, Senanayake.
In a way, not very closely.
Is there some room for suspicion that D.S. was very, very ambitious and he saw to it that the top men were pushed out?
That is what is in the case of B.B. Jayadeva called. He was the leader of the house.
Yes.
He then sent him as representative to India.
How did he manage to do that? Didn't D.B. Jayadeva realize that this was the end?
He must have realized, but some pressure must have been brought to bear on him.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, wouldn't you say that D.S. Senanayake was the right man for that time?
Yes. I would say that.
Would it be correct to say that old D.S. had very wide contacts and could fix things because he knew people in all parts of the island?
Yes. That is quite so.
So could it be possible, could we say that he used some very subtle methods sometimes with Oiji's help?
Yes.
And got around the people or bribed them to keep silent and did things like that?
Very possible. That's quite possible.
Okay, I've heard the story of how Oiji bribed the trade union leader and told him to settle the strike.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Among the Supreme Court judges, which judges impressed you?
Well, there was Sir Alexander Woodrenter, then Justice Shaw, and Justice Ennis, who was one of the most fearless judges we had on the Supreme Court bench. And then our even Kirinis judges are Garvin, Sood, and Disampaya. Not only judges, but they are great jurists.
Were you in the employ of the court when the Bracegirdle case occurred?
Yes. But I was even on circuit at the time. I read the report in the paper.
I have an interesting question with reference to the judicial system which the British introduced. I was wondering whether it brought law rather than justice. A lot of legalities rather than fairness.
Yes, it brought justice according to law. Justice according to law, that is what they say.
No, I was wondering whether, for instance, a judge seated in Colombo could decide some of these land cases. Whether he really understood what was going on, the village fights which were sometimes some other enmities which took the form of a land dispute.
Yes, but then he had a general knowledge of conditions prevailing in the country, and he had to go on the evidence and decide the case.
Yes, but sometimes the evidence was not comprehensive.
Not comprehensive. Yes, yes.
I mean, did you feel on certain occasions, from your inside knowledge, perhaps through a friend or a relative, that the evidence was not comprehensive or that the judge had given a wrong decision?
I have I know a few cases like that. I myself felt that the verdict, either the verdict was not justified or the judges didn't sum up as it should have done.
Verdict is very rare or?
Very rare.
You see, I have heard a land settlement officer, a British, Britisher, complain on this point. He said he knew the village and he knew the ins and outs. And he later read of a case and knew what had happened, but the judge had given a wrong decision.
Yes.
I'll finish soon. What about the workings of these village tribunals? Did you have any occasion to know how they worked?
Yes, village tribunals, of course, the land back Achille Clark, medical servant. It was at a very late stage that doctors were appointed as village tribunal judges, presidents. But then you couldn't have expected much justice from a clerical hand who doesn't know anything about the law. And they approach cases tried before village tribunals are petty bandits used assault and use cases. So I don't think much harm was done by the those people. They must have done their duty to the best of their ability. But now, of course, the village tribunals are functioning very well. Yes.
That's very interesting.
Very well.
In those days, what did government achieve by having this tribunal?
Because in a way, there was easy access to court. A man now residing in Mediyath need not have gone to Mathura or Gaul to file a case. He could have gone a few miles. There's a village tribunal. And then easy access to court. And there was no expense for them to bear. That was the main reason.
And wasn't the idea to have a simple process in which there were no lawyers?
Yes, that was the idea.
But in practice, didn't you get the plaintiff and the appellants and all of them in actually consulting proctors out of court, getting coached up and coming in?
No, not in village tribunals. I don't know the position now. Those days, doctors have no right to appear in a village tribunal.
Yes, that's formally.
Yes.
But before the court met, did this one party get together and meet a proctor and get some points and get coached up? And
they might as well go to five cases in the magistrate court instead of going to village tribunal. If they want to get in consult lawyers, they could have gone straight to the magistrate court.
Magistrate courts would they take civil cases?
Well, there's a court request.
Court request, yes. What did you feel about having AGAs as judges while they were AGAs to...
That was very unsatisfactory.
Why?
Because they did not know much about the law. They had a very meager knowledge of the law. And they hadn't the power to sit and analyze evidence. Judge has that.
Yes, but weren't some of the judges of that day, of the 1920s and 30s, civil servants, like the AGAs?
Yes. Most of them were. It was only after that the government decided on appointing practicing lawyers as judges.
Did you feel that it was much better to have practicing lawyers?
Oh, yes. Much better.
Among the civil servants of the 30s, what sort of men were Tyrrell and Wedderburn and Woods?
I think they were great Englishmen. Yes, impartial and very efficient in their work.
But did you feel that they were a bit imperialistic and authoritarian?
Yes, they were.
Final question about the nationalist movement. Have you any idea what led to the conflict between our leaders in the early 20s, that is between the Tamil leaders and the Sinhalese?
What happened was, one reason at least, there was the Colombo across the field. Then they had come to an arrangement whereby J.P. Reese was to contest some of the field. Then Sir James Pierce went back on his promise.
Why did he do that?
He was influenced by his wife, by him. He wanted him to contest the Columbus field.
I was wondering whether F.R. Sennac and D.S. Sennac and that group was persuaded. Yeah,
there's that possibility also. So that was the beginning of the rift between the Singhalese and the Tamil.
On the other hand, isn't it correct to say that even among the Sinhalese leaders in the National Congress, there were either personal rivalries or caste rivalries?
There were.
For instance, did you feel that some of the distaste for Gunasinghe was partly on caste grounds?
Yes.
Oh, you saw that clearly?
I must have had a strong feeling.
There's another fact I was trying to check on. Someone said that D.S. and F.R. Sennac got C.H.Z. Fernando to contest Mr. C.E. Correa or Victor Correa in Chilao. I think it's C.E. Correa, because they felt that C.E. Correa was getting too much, was building up his prestige as president of the National Congress, and they wanted to bring him down a bit.
There is a possibility.
But I find that a bit difficult to believe, because of C.H. Fernando is a Catholic and he wouldn't have been all that close to the Sennac.
No. I don't think it's that possible. Must have been near misapprehension on the part of some people.
Of course, this theory was allied to another theory, that because C.E. Correa had gone on the deputation to Jaffna to try and patch up the differences, some people were not particularly keen on what he had done and what he had agreed to. Have you heard this story?
No, I didn't hear it.
Thank you.
End of interview with E. Gunaratna on the 11th of January, 1968.